This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Oh, man, just exhausted, covered in vomit and staying up all night. Yeah, it's just, another week at the coal house, man. But I've been nursing some pipes, and that's been good for my spirit. And just trucking along. We're making it okay.
Listen, man, it gets better. It gets better. You know,
does it really? Because I just really can't, the only thing that's encouraging to me right now is being able to look at my look at my 18-month-old daughter and how cute she is and precious and sweet and tender and all those things. And like, and just know that eventually it might get to be like that.
All right. Look, here's the deal. We this past weekend, we went to, we're here in Houston. We're very close to the coast. Yeah. And it's like maybe about a 40-45 minute drive down to, at least from our church anyway, down to the beach. And so we thought, you know what, let's after church today, let's take the girls. We'll have everything all packed up. We'll go down to the beach and we'll kind of have an afternoon there. And we were sitting out there. We got out. It was really nice. And, you know, the kids, they got some boogie boards and they were out there riding the waves. And I'm sitting there looking at these little people. And I'm like, man, I remember the first time we took these kids to the beach, we couldn't even enjoy ourselves because we're just panicking about like, oh, they're going to waddle off into the ocean.
I know, man.
This, that, or the other. But, you know, just a few short years, man, they're basically people. They're telling you what you think and everything else. Now, we're not quite back.
Basically people.
I mean, like almost, you know, it's still, you know, there's that pet to people ratio that happens in the maturation.
Oh, they're almost like little people. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, there is something that, it is interesting that they just as, your daughter or your daughter's children become more aware, you start, you know, realizing that they're, developing these little personalities and, you know, developing opinions and looking to you for every little, you know, cue and everything. And so it's interesting, you know, just as Charlotte, our daughter, will watch me puff my pipe. She makes her little noise with her mouth.
And watching Daddy,
it's just funny, man. Even, you know, I'm eating cereal in the morning and I have a way I kind of stab at my, you know, cornflakes to make sure all the milk is covering it. And I'm noticing that now she's doing the same thing, even though she doesn't know why and it doesn't make any sense to her. But like, it's so funny, man. So we're doing okay. We're doing okay. Like I said before, at least to someone, just running on caffeine and nicotine, baby.
Well, you know, it's amazing because, obviously our children, kind of the generation that's kind of coming up, looks to us for guidance and respect.
Yeah.
And we kind of look to them and we see that respect. There's a mutual, there's this relationship that exists between these kind of two generational roles, right? The elder statesman out here trying to make a good legacy for himself and kind of the younger kind of up and coming looking to that elder statesman and for guidance. It ties directly into what this episode's going to be about. I'm really glad I was able
to
make that happen.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Good. That's good. Listen, I like that. Yeah.
We got a great one we're about to dive into. We got a special guest as well. But first, we want to give a shout out to our brand new club member, man, joining the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club, the Spurgeon Piper.
Oh, that's great. The Spurgeon Piper, man. Awesome. We, one of the featured winners for last year's Best of 2020.
That's right.
Man, that's fantastic. Welcome, Spurgeon Piper. We appreciate you supporting Country Squire Radio and joining at the Squire level.
That's right, man. Of course, patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio is the place to go to help support the show. Now, the Spurgeon Piper is not the actual, like ghost.
That's not his birth certificate name.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. We'd have to see. But man, like I said, we've got a great show planned for today. I say a great show. We've got a show planned for today. Something tells me it's going to be.
It'll
a show.
Be great. It's going to be great.
Oh yeah, no, it's going to be great. Not nervous at all. it's a show that, to be honest, there's a topic that I have wanted to talk about for quite some time. I think it's safe to say we both have, but I specifically have very much desired to dive into this mildly, if not more so, controversial topic. And you know, we kind of put it off because we wanted to make sure that we did it the right way. Well, and also we wanted to do so with a certain sense of gravity and a certain sense of levity. and a certain sense of, you know, diplomatic as possible approach.
Well, and yeah, I mean, the, you know, of course, again, we, you know, talking about our different, you know, styles and methods and all that kind of stuff, a sense of reverence, but also a sense of, you know, directness and maybe regret and all these emotions kind of mixed in to make sure we're communicating things. And it's, and that's, you know, 3 years after the dust kind of settled around this. And
that's
so,
right. That's right. And you know, you and I have a really good dynamic, right?
You still like, haven't mentioned yet what.
No, I know. I'm building to it. I'm about to introduce our guest as well. But the thing is, man, you and me, we have a really good dynamic. Like, you know, throughout our history together, like I push you out of, you know, like the space to get onto
comfort zone.
Yeah. Push you out of the comfort zone and you pull me in from falling off the ledge. You know what I mean? Like we don't go into the abyss because of you, but we actually go somewhere because of me. You know,
that's a great way to put it. That's actually a great way to put it. Bo, the adventurer, he's one of the, what do I call you? The point, shoot, and then aim person, you know,
I'm the
inertia guy, you know, that's sitting over in the corner that, you know, just comfortable in my cozy little sweater and, you know, it just, oh, the world's perfect how it is. Let's don't screw with anything. And, so we make a good team.
We really do. But man, I am so excited because we got somebody we're adding to the team today for this topic. And of course, listeners recently will be not surprised to hear his voice as he has been so kind to step up for you while you were taking some time.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining the show once again, Mr. Russ Hicks.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you this afternoon?
Man, we're doing very, very well.
Yeah. And hey, real quick, Bo, I want to just tell Russ publicly, thank you so much for hopping on board, you know, for me while I was gone doing, you know, daddy duty and helping out the mom and all that stuff. So it was just really, really helpful, man. Thanks for pitching in. Thanks for supporting Country Squire Radio and Bo and myself for so many years now.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. It's the least I could do.
So Russ, man, you know, listeners know, of course, you are somebody who, and again, I still haven't mentioned what the topic is, but you're somebody who is obviously well known as an amazing member of the pipe community. You have such knowledge. You have quite a palate yourself. You've got a desire not just to learn the product, but the industry. And honestly, I think that you're going to make an amazing addition to this discussion today for a number of reasons. Now, all that being said, today, as the listener already knows, because they saw the title of this episode, we're talking about McClelland. Get down, everybody, get down. Okay, all right, sorry. I thought I heard shots fired. We're talking about McClelland, and we're gonna do a bit of a moratorium, but we're gonna approach this from a couple of different ways. For one thing, you've got three voices on this podcast that represent three different perspectives.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, John David, of course, you are an industry. At this point, you're kind of I would argue, a pillar of the industry. You are a someone who is a tobacconist, as a store,
you know, that
owner.
Discolored, like crumbling pillar over there in the corner that like doesn't, you know, isn't really necessary, but people leave up because it looks interesting. Yeah, that one's me.
No, if you go to the Acropolis, you can see where they've kind of like wedged in a pillar to hold up the other pillars. That's you, man.
That one's me. Okay, yeah. I got it. All right, absolutely. I feel better now.
But no, you are in the industry. You are deep into it. And then of course, Russ, man, is a consumer, somebody who has a lot of passion, has a cellar filled with McClelland products. That is, you know, he has yet to tell us exactly how much McClelland, hopefully that'll come out during this episode and the location of the cellar and the keys and the access code.
Password.
So a consumer from that standpoint. And I find myself in a very unique place here. Because I am very much on the fringe. Yes, I'm a consumer. I'm passionate about pipes and I'm very passionate about kind of the art form and that sort of thing. And I'm kind of industry adjacent because obviously this podcast has kind of become a component of the industry on the fringes of the industry. And that's kind of where I find myself. And that gives me a unique vantage point because I have two ears, one pointed in one direction, one pointed in the other. And I hear things that some people might not want me to hear. and it makes me want to talk about them because that's what I do for a living. And so Russ, with his knowledge of McClelland and I, with my passion for this topic, attempted to go into this episode while you were out. And I realized after the fact, you know what? This is far too much of a landmine. We need John David. I personally need John David here to hold me back so that we go into this conversation the right way. So.
Rein it in. I caught me a Marlin. Yeah, no, it's good. I'm glad we're all here and I'm glad we could talk about, you know, obviously such a, you know, venerated company and, you know, their history and also yes. Also the impact, you know, that they had and, you know, the how kind of their, you know, it ended and, you know, our hope for the future and all that kind of stuff. So these are good things to talk about. It really is kind of a postmortem on McClelland. And, yeah. You know, 3 years later, it's time, you know, we've kind of folks have grieved and folks have had a chance to, you know, go through the whole, you know, spending $150 on a can of Christmas cheer on eBay and all that kind of stuff. And we've made our silly mistakes on buying, you know, way overpriced tins of tobacco, maybe before the bubble popped and all that kind of stuff. But, right. but you know, so we've let the dust settle, you know, and it's kind of, we're not in the middle of the highly charged emotional end of McClelland and certainly the best, you know, American tobacco blender, probably in history. And, you know, so we're removed a little bit and I think we can talk about it well. And, you know, we've got the right ingredients here. We've got the right people, hopefully to have a nice discussion.
That's right. All right. So just to muddy the water even further, I decided that the best way to talk about McClelland is to kind of take what I'm calling the Bourne approach. For any of our listeners that followed like the Bourne franchise with Matt Damon, we're going to do, instead of the Bourne identity, we're going to do
such a nerd.
I am such a nerd. I have no problem with this. We're going to do the McClelland identity, the McClelland legacy, and the McClelland ultimatum. That is the way that we're structuring this episode. And starting off with the McClelland identity, Russ, there is probably nobody better on the planet, especially from a consumer standpoint, who can kind of give us a bit of a history. What is the McClelland identity? How did the company come to be? And what did it come to be known as in its heyday with pipe smokers and kind of the community at large?
Yeah, right. So, man, I think you got to go back to all the way to, say, 1977. I think that's when the company started. And have y'all ever heard of, is it his name, Carl Ewa?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really think it was he and Mary, it was their idea originally. And they wrote a great book back in like 1974, when the book came out. They wrote a book about pipes and tobacco. And I think he worked at Diebels.
It was Diebels. Kansas City, right?
Kansas mm-hmm. City. That's right. And I've never been, I never went there, but he was there and he'd worked there for several years and then decided to branch off and do his own thing. He was blending some blends for them and wanted to do his own stuff. So I think they parted and started McClelland, which I believe is his grandfather's name. And anyway, that was 77. And I believe in 77, they came out with 5 English blends or Oriental blends and 5 Virginia blends. And that's the way it started. And then by 78, they were producing bulk tobaccos. And I want to say in 1980, that's when Mike McNeil joined. And of course, right around that time, they were getting into aromatics, how they figured out how to do aromatics. I think it's a neat story where Mary goes to a science library. It's the Linda Hall Science Library, and figures out, you know, what she needs, what they need to add, and their aromatics come alive. And right around that time, I think they had a tragedy where Carl he was lifting weights and had an aneurysm. And
yeah,
it's a real sad story, and she details that quite well in some of the podcasts that Pipes Magazine does, and. So people should go and listen to that. It's a mm-hmm. it's a touching story. But I think she essentially said he was never quite the same after that. And so, you know, moving on to 83, that's when 5100 comes out, which we all know and love. And it became
the world changed. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So and this is well before I even started smoking a pipe. You know, I wasn't smoking a pipe until 87. So they were 10 years ahead of me, and I didn't really know much about it until the mid 90s. But I want to say in the late 80s, they started having some trouble acquiring Leaf, and the big tobacco, big cigarette guys basically saved them. I think Mike McNeil says they saved them from the street.
Yeah, I've heard Mike mention that before, you know, that they were having some real difficulty there, and kind of had some of the, you know, big T guys take them under their wing and really keep them afloat, you know. And so in some sense, this boutique small company that was literally working out of grandpa's basement, you know, they right. eventually moved out and got their own space. But this was until it ended, for its entire history, a small, very boutique, you know, family operation. And needed some help along the way, as gosh, my family business knows very well. So, yeah, it's exactly right.
Well, it was clear they dodged a lot of bullets, and they had some friends in high places. And I think they're, you know, they talk about the quality of Leaf that they were able to obtain because of these, you know, big tobacco buyers. I think that made a big difference. And then, you know, in the early 90s, say 92, you see Christmas Cheer come out. And I want to say in the early 90s, they had a Personal Reserve mm-hmm. tobacco, and they had teamed up with, I want to say, Levin Pipes International. So that's Barry Levin. And he was in Craftsbury, Vermont. And so I think that's where the Craftsbury series starts to come from. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think I originally discovered them. I got a tin of Levin's International Virginia Woods in 1993.
Yeah.
So it was 100-gram tin in this black. Oh, it's just wonderful. And I remember getting it and opening it up and saying, this isn't that good. And I mean, surprisingly, right, I just wasn't ready for it because I was smoking aromatics mainly all through the late 80s. But it was one of the first things that I'd gotten. And then the next year, Throgmorton comes out, which was I want to say completely Mary's concoction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when it hit, I remember this was a year before I got married, and I was down on the coast in Mississippi at the Epitome, and I picked up a tin of that. And I said, you know, this is amazing. And I was stuck on Latakia for a decade because of Throgmorton.
It's so funny too, just knowing you, Russ, and knowing your, you know, flavor sensibilities and all that kind of stuff. Just hearing you say, "Oh yeah, I was a Latakia smoker for a decade," like that just kind of, number one, that blows my mind. But number two, you know, as we've talked and discussed all this stuff, you said you became a pipe smoker in 1987 or something like that. Just so everyone's clear, Bo and I were born in 1984. So just to date us a little bit, yeah, and put everything in perspective here. But yeah,
well, that's, I feel younger being around you guys. So
glad someone does.
But I guess what's really interesting is at the Tinderbox at the Metro Center Mall in Jackson was where I got introduced to Latakia.
Yeah.
The proprietor there, I don't remember his name, I'm sure you do, but he I would go in there and I would buy my, you know, 2 ounces of Wilshire, which is rebranded 1Q.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I'd come in there, you know, at least a couple of times a month and pick it up. And one day he was not mean to me, but he said, you know, you kids, all you do is smoke candy. He said, you need to try something else. So he pointed me to some Latakia, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember nobody liked it when I smoked it. And I remembered that it didn't burn my tongue as bad.
Yeah.
And it didn't taste like it smelled. So I was already kind of primed, but it didn't have the aromatic sense that Throgmorton did. I feel like Throgmorton is nearly a crossover and between aromatic and Latakia, because it's just a little bit sweeter. It's not like a, you know, a plum pudding crossover, you know, some of those others, but it's borderline, and I really liked it. And for a long time. So, I mean, that takes you to about 94. And then I think Christmas Cheer, I think I want to, my first tin of Christmas Cheer, I think, was 95. And I didn't get one in 96 when he stoved it and everybody hated it.
But yeah, that was the real controversial year where, you know, folks were writing him hate mail and threatening to steal his water heater and all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny to listen to him talk about that. And
yeah.
So around 96 was when Pipes and Tobaccos magazine came out, and I started subscribing to that. And then it made sense to me. It's like, oh, well, this is this company, McClellan. I had no idea really who they were or what they were, but I knew I was buying their stuff, you know, consistently. So, you know, that kind of takes you through the history there. The modern history is interesting. When you look around October of 2012, Mary McNeil got on Pipes Magazine radio show on episode 3. And that's when I kind of started to put a name and a sound to a company. Because I just thought of them as this company that I really enjoy. I didn't know it was a small company. It could have been a giant company. And I was like, oh, well, this is different. And I had started to read in Pipes and Tobaccos magazine. Every once in a while, I read about them. And then they had the nine, was it, wherever they did Balkan Sobrani, where they had the competition between everybody trying to recreate. And then I really started to get into that. And so I want to say, what was it, around 2016, Mike McNeil, the first time I'd ever heard him, came on Pipes Magazine, episode 202. So taken aback at just the candor. I mean, it was full force, and he was pulling no punches in the things that he said. And I was really intrigued by just his demeanor and everything about him. I was like, yeah, I like this guy, even though it's kind of raw. The way he's he's saying things.
You say it also diplomatically, like we all love Mike. He's one of the best blenders in American history, and he's just kind of a jerk. And it's so funny because, you know, Mary was able to keep him kind of, behind or at bay a little bit for, you know, the majority of their company's history. And it was, you know, so it was neat. But there towards the end, he started to kind of come out a little bit, didn't he? And he started to make these, you know, stick his toe in the water of public celebrity and all this kind of stuff. And it was really enlightening, I think, for a lot of people to see that. And so, Mike is, you know, like I said, he's just one of those people that is incredibly gifted. And we are blessed and sometimes put off by his straightforwardness. And I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. Well, all those things are true, and they make kind of the perfect, they're the perfect yin and yang, right?
Oh, I mean, they are polar opposites. Always have been. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, and I did get to spend some time with them at Disney World one time. I got to spend quite a bit of time talking to Mike that I was pretty sure that I would never get that opportunity.
Yeah.
I got to ask him all.
You've told me this story before. This was like the first time you met Mike. Is that right?
Yep.
At Disney World. Yeah.
Yep. So, that's exactly. And Brian Levine and his wife Dale had gone to Disney, and we went down there and met them. He's like, "Hey, I got somebody I want you to meet." He's like, "You know, yeah, here's Mike and Mary McNeil." I'm like, "Oh, you know." So it was and Mike and I got to talk pipe tobacco, and you know, it wasn't like we talked for days about it, because they were on vacation and trying to get away from it. But man, he was a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
So that was really, really interesting. But I do remember when he gave that interview in 2016, he said something very interesting to me. He said, you know, I'm going to come out and I'm going to do 2016 and 2017 Christmas cheer at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's unnerving, right?
That's curious.
Because,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, wonder if this is the beginning of the end, because, you know, they were getting up in age. All the FDA stuff was going on. There's all these reasons. And so I started to take notice of it. And then the, you know, a couple of years later, I want to say it was early January, and I had just called you because I was on the way back to Georgia. And I visited the Squire.
You were barking up the tree for some 5,100, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And that was like a day before, you know.
Did your boy hook you up? Did your boy hook you up?
Yes, he did. And with two pounds of it. And I know that you knew that the end was near. Well, I didn't really know.
And that's actually, we'll discuss that momentarily, but that, I think that's actually not true at the time.
Hey, everybody. Going to pause real quick to talk about our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum. That's right. They've been at it for over 150 years. And guys, they have got the best quality corncob pipes on the planet. Of course, everybody knows I'm a huge fan of the Country Gentleman pipe. It is by far one of my favorites. I am finally looking forward to going back out into the world, traveling a bit. And that means doing a good amount of fishing. And I cannot go fishing without my Country Gentleman. It is a great bowl. You get a good amount of pipe tobacco in there. And for me, man, the Salmon Slayer, as I have nicknamed it, has come with me on many a trip. While there have not been many salmon slayed, there has always been a good bowl of tobacco enjoyed through it. So be sure to check out Missouri Meerschaum. And by the way, they've got apparel as well. Hats, shirts, even face masks. If you go to corncobpipe.com, you can find all of their amazing products, including their apparel. And if you happen to be rocking one of their hats or shirts or even the face mask, be sure to snap a selfie, post it out. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And with two pounds of it, and I know that you knew that the end was near. I didn't really know,
and that's actually we'll discuss that momentarily. But that, I think that's actually not true at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, that I wasn't sure that was the case, but you know, I think you nailed kind of the story of McClelland and their, you know, again, we're talking about this storied and legendary American tobacco company that came out with all these hits that got people just really into the pipe smoking, you know, the nuances of pipe tobacco and the, you know, the delicateness of the leaf. And, you know, it would take your most avid cigar smoker, and they would, you know, try a tobacco made by McClelland and be stunned that tobacco could be that complex and interesting, you know? And I think that's where McClelland's, you know, we talk about their identity and Bo's kind of arc in the conversation. I think that's where they live, you know. McClelland, what you know, Carl Ewa and Mary, and then you know, after Carl passed, and Mike came on board, and eventually Mike and Mary got married, which is its own neat story and the romance they're involved. And, you know, it all centered around tobacco, which is just really interesting to me, and working in grandpa's basement and, you know, getting bailed out by big tobacco. It's just so fascinating, the whole thing. But, you know, overall, they didn't compromise for decades on quality, and they were, you know, very intent on pushing the envelope in very, very specific ways. And all their blends, if you go back and think about the tobaccos, they were nuanced and interesting. They had character and, you know, weren't particularly blunt force trauma in one particular, you know, flavor profile or anything like that. And I think that's where they lived, you know. And of course, they were known for their, you know, the major powerhouse tobaccos they made in Virginia's and Oriental tobaccos. I mean, they just really, that was their identity. You know, they made a little bit of everything. The only thing they didn't do, and I talked to Mary about this one time, but they just weren't really fans of Dark Fire Kentucky. That was a tobacco that they just didn't really get into that much. They didn't really have an affinity for that. Didn't think it was, you know, particularly, you know, a part of their kind of a part of their, I don't know, bag of tricks or whatever. And so, but everything else, you know, they were just so, so good at, but particularly those Virginias and those Oriental blends that they came out with, really, really amazing. It's funny, kind of, you know, knowing we were going to talk about McClelland today and thinking about McClelland and my memories of them and my, you know, my collection of them and how big it was and how much it's dwindled. I popped a tin of Aurora, McClelland's Aurora today, which was gifted to me several years ago by a friend. And it's funny, I had, you know, wasn't particularly a fan of Aurora, wasn't, you know, didn't think of it as, it was never really one of their, you know, hot sellers or anything like that. It wasn't one that people fought over. You know, it was, you know, typically at the Squire anyway, one of the ones that would kind of wind up at the back of the shelf that, you know, didn't, you know, would get looked over by the Throgmortons and the Dark Stars and, you know, the Club Blends and the Orientals and all these. And so, anyway, I just was like, well, let me smoke Aurora again. Gosh, it's been years. And someone gave me this tin, and I'm gonna get on mic with a couple of good friends today and talk about McClelland. And you know, I was sitting there in my office at the pipe shop earlier today smoking Aurora, and it just made me angry because for a couple of reasons, it made me angry. Number one, you know, it was like, why can I not make something that doggone good? Because it is, fantastic. You know, again, this is one of their, you know, blends that is not, you know, the blue ribbon marquee blend. And yet it's so good. I mean, Mike was just so good at what he did. You know, he was so, so authoritative. But I mean, this is a, you know, a blend that, of course, it's had several years on it, and it's you know, just in its prime smoking condition. But man, everything he touched was just so tasty. And I've said he a couple times. This was her deal too. She was, right. You know, he was quick always to give her the kind of the you know, the credit for developing some of their biggest blends. And Mary, being more humble, would, you know, kind of reluctantly you know, take that. But so anyway, it made me angry. I was like, it is so good, it made you angry. It's like, why can't I do that? You know, doggone it. This is not even one of his celebrated blends, and I can't even come close to this.
I've committed my entire life to this craft, and he figured it out in one day. I mean, not
I know. As a kind of a segue, you know, part of the sorrow in it for me is that, okay, this is, you know, one of their blends that is not you know, remembered constantly in some of the forums and everything. And yet this blend will never be consumed or, you know, sought after, or it'll never be purchased again, by the retail consumer. And it was just sad because it's so good. It's like, man, it's just a, it's just a tragedy. It just really is.
So that's the thing, right? Yeah. The products were incredible. And I would say there was something about the way in which they handled their branding that also brought in a lot of new pipe smokers as well.
Yeah, Bo, like, you and I talked about that so much, man. You nailed that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, you were always, whenever we kind of would cover there, especially if you go back to the early days of Country Squire Radio, we like the McClellan was heavily featured in a lot of those early tobacco talks. And, yeah, you know, one of the things we would constantly go to is the branding. But, you know, it's interesting because I notice there is somewhat of a correlation that exists. You mentioned that, you know, there when you kind of step into that role of kind of celebrity in this space. And one of the things I have noticed as I've met people in the industry, it is filled with some of the kindest, nicest, like most humble people with some of the most fantastic, amazing skills like that, that exists in this industry. This industry to some extent is known for that. However, there are also, there are also individuals in this industry that have this like very like kiss the ring mindset. And I'm not saying that Mike was one of those. I've never actually met Mike, but I do know that that exists. I have interacted with some of these people. Some of these people have reacted a certain way when I didn't kiss the ring. And it was very bizarre to me. And again, this is because I'm like, I don't have to kiss your ring. Like, what do you like? I'm not an industry person. Like, why are you treating, like, what is like, and how dare
I'm
you?
I'm just a guy that likes to smoke a pipe with a microphone, you know?
I'm one of your customers, man. Like, what is this? Like, so that is always very bizarre to me. And it's so jarring because it is not the norm, but yeah. I think because it's not the norm, you have a lot of these kind folks, a lot of these good folks, and then you get these kiss the ring folks. And because they throw their weight around so much, it puts a lot of people in a very awkward position when you do something, when kind of the kiss the ring folks screw up or do something damaging to the industry. Because I can tell you, we're about to talk about how McClellan came to an end, and we're going to go into kind of some of the details here, but I can tell you this, there are a lot of people in the industry that want to speak up about how hurt they are with the way that McClellan left, but still will not because of that kiss the ringness. And I'm not going to get on to anybody for not speaking out. That's fine. I've talked to folks, John David, who actually said they wanted to come on when we did this episode. They wanted to come on if we modulated their voice. Like, that's so where it's
someone
at.
Actually told you that?
Someone actually told me that. And again, I'm not judging that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, and again, we're talking about pipe smoking.
Exactly. Thank you, John.
We're talking about pipe. And so I'm hoping that people can, you know,
but it's livelihood from an industry standpoint. This is people's livelihood.
No, like, it's my livelihood.
Exactly.
And so I think, you know, as you Country Squire Radio listener are listening in and kind of getting a flavor of this conversation, like you probably have a sense now of why it took us 3 years to get here, right? McClellan shut its doors, of course, in early 2018. It was incredibly sudden. The industry had no, forewarning of this at all. And just because of that, we were all kind of in shock. And now, you know, here 3 years later, we Bo and I are, you know, gently around the edges, taking a look at this scab, being like, can we pick at it yet?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been wanting to pick at it for quite some time.
You've been chomping at the bit, sir.
I mean, you hear, I've just heard too many from a couple of different angles, to be honest. Like, there's a very easy way to kind of point out, like, hey, this wasn't handled well. And there's some that are a little bit more accusational. And so I want to be careful about going into those. Let's just talk about the facts first off, right?
Yeah, like, I think that's a great place to start, as we should. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Russ, you mentioned you were in town. You got a sense that John David knew that the end was nigh. And John David, you kind of pushed back a little bit on that and said, like, well, that might not be true. So unpack that.
Yeah, I think that's good and right to do. So we were at the end of 2017. I was a new business owner at this point, and the Country Squire Radio, let's see, you and I, Bo, at that point had been recording for probably 4 years, I think. And so, we'd been around a little bit, and folks had found us, and we were kind of collecting some pipe smokers together, and you know, really blessed to be a part of folks getting together in the community and that type of thing. And so You know, that kind of gives you a flavor of where we were at the time. You know, I was trying to get this, you know, really old tobacconist kind of back on its feet after years of, you know, stagnation. And, you know, Russ, having been from Jackson, you know, good friend of the show, early listener, and, you know, someone that, you know, had supported us for a very long time there. And you know, from a daily, weekly standpoint, the Country Squire, we blend pipe tobacco. That's what we do. That's how we pay the bills. We are a 50-year-old pipe shop, and we sell cigars. We're proud of that. We sell some really good cigars, but you know, when you walk in our shop, our tobacco blends and really fancy pipes are front and center, and that's our identity, and we are proud of that. And so, you know, for years we sourced bulk tobacco. We use whole leaf, and then we also use leaf that has been pre-processed. And actually, that's probably the majority of what we use. But the pre-processed leaf, that, you know, we source that from a lot of different places. We use some of the best blending houses in the world, and one of those, of course, and one of my favorites, which I'll share some McClellan favorites later, which I dearly miss. But you know, one of my favorite places to go to for high quality leaf was McClelland. And it was so precious, because when you called McClelland to make an order, the person who picked up the phone, the actual person that picked up the phone and grabbed a notepad to take your order, was Mary McNeil. Mm-hmm. And this precious little lady, you know, she actually reminds me a lot of Gwen Reeves, the lady who hired me, this Southern belle who was just this genteel, intelligent, you know, sophisticated woman that had a lot of knowledge, but also was very strong and, you know, just really, really interesting person. Mary's like that, you know, and she would be the one to pick up the phone. And, you know, we kind of go over what was going on in the industry and what was happening at our shop and in the factory. And, you know, I'd beg her to come take a tour, and she'd shoot me down like she always did and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was just this nice thing. And then you'd order your bulk tobacco and your tin tobacco. We'd, you know, talk to her and say, well, I need this many cans of Throgmorton and this many cans. Oh, it's Christmas time. Well, let's pick up some Christmas cheer. And you've got that much left. Okay, well, send me this much of it and all that kind of stuff. And so it was towards the end of 2017. And so I called Mary, as I was wont to do, you know, once every couple of weeks. And she was out of stock in two or three of their bulk tobaccos that we used very, very regularly. And, you know, a small shop like the Country Squire, we very much over our history have been, I hesitate to use the phrase hand to mouth, but in some sense, that is kind of what it is. You know, we keep a very thin stock of certain things, knowing that we're just going to be reordering it on a regular basis. If you've been in retail, you know that it's much less about profit and loss as it is cash flow. So you don't order, you know, if you're a small shop, you're not ordering enough that you're going to sell over the next year and a half. You're ordering maybe the next 3 weeks worth, or the next month's worth, or maybe in some cases the next 2 weeks worth, or whatever it is. And so then, so that was the case for us at the time in a lot of different products that we sold and tobacco leaves that we used. And at McClelland, you know, they always had their stuff, and it was never fail. It was one of those things that you never were told over the phone that they were out of stock on a bulk tobacco product. And that happened on a random phone call. I think it was December 2017, and it shook me. It really shook me. And I, you know, we had some discussions with Mary at the time, and you know, were given the impression that they were having trouble finding quality leaf to make their tobaccos, but that they, and this is a very clear but that we received from them, but that they weren't looking to go away, and that was that was unsettling, but also we were reassured at the, in this exact moment that, okay, well, you know, y'all are, you're looking to source them, but you're not, you know, looking to leave the business or anything like that. You're not shutting down or you're not getting rid of these blends. You're just, maybe it's taking you a little longer to find what you need kind of thing. And so,
all right, so let's pause here real quick though,
yeah, because that is the setting the stage for, you know, Russ, you know, calling me to get some 5100. It's like, well, you know, I've got it now, and I think we'll be able to get it in the future. But you know, the you know, supply of it right now, our ability to get it right now readily, just as much as we want, is not what it is. So yeah, Russ, he's a good friend, and I know he, you know, smokes and depends on this tobacco a lot. And I'll send you a couple pounds. I think, you know, maybe in a month or so I can send you some more, even, because we'll get more from McClelland. And that that second shipment never came.
All right, but so like, all right, so Russ, I kind of want to toss this to you now, because what John David said is absolutely true, and we got. And I remember at the time, there was a lot of folks, much like yourself, Russ, that were starting to kind of read the tea leaves, or in this case, the tobacco leaves. We're starting to read the tobacco leaves and see kind of that things seemed like they were going in a certain kind of direction. I mean, what was the status at that point of the consumer community, the forums, the kind of the online pipe clubs, Facebook groups? How would you say the conversation around where McClelland was going there?
Well, I don't keep up with those probably like I should, but I do know that on January 8th, Steve Fallon posted something that basically said 5100 was discontinued.
Yeah.
And I had a heart attack and they took me to the hospital and all those things. And I remember just going, you know, how could this be? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself at that time, if you don't have 5100, then you don't have a company. Mm-hmm. Because I mean that tobacco at the time, it had been in production for 35 years. It was literally in everything all across the world. I mean, I don't know how many blends and brick and mortar stores, you know, yeah, used, and I mean, and all the other things that John David talked about. So, so that was, and if they didn't have that, I didn't really care. I was done with them. And which isn't totally true. I love all of their Virginia ribbons and most all of their flakes, but I was really surprised. And the story was that Mike had made a batch of 5100. They tasted it and said it wasn't right, and they threw it away. And I mean, that just went viral.
Yeah.
So it did.
That was the story, you know, going around at the time. And I think what was so that was the early kind of entree into this, right? As a retailer, we were getting some, you know, early warning signs. We were like, well, you know, all of a sudden it's hard to get some of our ingredient tobaccos from McClelland. And, you think you might be out of that? Well, you know, Mary's saying it might be another month. We're looking really hard for this leaf, but we're not able to source it and this kind of thing. And I don't know what's going on at the factory. They won't let me in the factory. And I've never been to, you know, where they're, you know, getting their leaves at from the Carolinas and all this kind of stuff. And so, I'm just kind of taking their word for it. It's like, well, okay, it sounds like they're trying to get, you know, things together and are committed to this, but, you know, we're out of stock right now. And so, we were discouraged, but also encouraged that, okay, well, this is a stable, you know, a real true pillar of the tobacco industry, the pipe industry. They'll figure it out. They'll work it out. And that didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but at the time, yeah, you know, from a show standpoint, we were getting emails, we were getting comments, people were wanting to know what was going on. And I remember very specifically, because I would ask you and you would share basically exactly what you were told, mm-hmm, from the company. And then when it turned out to be the case that they were in fact shutting down their doors, the backlash, I'm sure they got backlash. The backlash that we got was extremely harsh, kind of out of nowhere. And I say that because, you know, obviously, you know, we're a pretty laid back show. We're not exactly one.
Yeah.
Present episode notwithstanding, we typically don't like dive into controversy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just for the most part, not something that we do. And we had to do some work of explaining, look, we're not journalists. Like, we're not going to get the big scoop or anything of that nature. That was not the case. Yeah. And if we knew, you know, something, we would have told you. And honestly, to be, I think to be quite frank, If they had asked us not to talk about it, then we probably wouldn't have talked about it, would be my guess.
Yeah.
At least on the show, just because we want to be courteous to like, okay, you're working out stuff, but we also wouldn't come on and be like, everything's fine, which to some extent we were sharing the same message that they shared with us, which was everything was fine. And so afterwards people contacted us, you know, like you lied to us. You sat here and said everything was fine and you knew it wasn't. And the fact of the matter is we didn't know.
We
knew what you knew.
Yeah, we didn't.
Go ahead, Don.
I think that was what was really, really painful about the experience. And I hope the first part of our conversation has given, you know, you, the listener, a good understanding of the reverence that I have for Mike and Mary and McClelland and what they've done and what they've contributed to the tobacco industry, and certainly to the pipe world. It was so shocking at the time when, we're hearing, number one, there's no forewarning about this at all. And it's not just them. It is hundreds and hundreds of tobacconists around the country that are, depending on this leaf day in and day out in order to, make their,
it's a component product.
It's a component product. And we can get leaf from other sources and we've pivoted and reblended things and we've retired blends and come out with new blends and all this other stuff. But, we used a lot of McClelland because we believed in their blends. We thought they were some of the best. We believed in their component ingredients, thought they were some of the best and frankly trusted them. And that was shaken in 2017 at the very end of the year when, we couldn't order anything. And that's fine. That happens all the time. There are, places that run out of things here and there. And that's part of being in any type of business. But I think what was most hurtful about it was when we were assured over and over that they were doing everything they could in order to resolve the problem. And then it came out about 3 months later that they knew a year ago that they were going to close down. Mm-hmm. I think that's what really hurt. And again, I think Bo, you mentioned we've never seen ourselves as journalist folks. We've got certainly other friends in the pipe world that do media stuff that are, more along those lines, I guess. Bo and I, we come on here and have campy conversations and enjoy, talking about our hobbies and, the passion we have about pipes and this kind of stuff. But, we've never really seen ourselves as investigative reporters or anything like that. And so, I was quick at the moment. These are folks that I trusted. We depended on them and our shop had used their products and proudly sold them for years. And so, I was quick to take their words and reassure the public about this brand that we all really loved. And frankly, Russ, if I thought I wouldn't get any more 5100, I wouldn't have sent you that much.
I'm not giving it back.
The John David seller would be a little fatter.
I would have proudly blended, so many great blends that we had at the time with it. And then I sat on a whole pile of it and probably bathed in it Scrooge McDuck style, but it was painful. I'm smoking it right now,
by the way.
And you should. I've got some 5100 back at the shop and, I'm just, it's hard to let go of this stuff because it's so good, and everything they've done at McClelland was so overwhelmingly tasty and sophisticated and all this stuff. But the way those few months there at the end of 2017 and early 2018, the way those months went down, that was really painful and it hurt. It hurt a lot of people in the pipe industry. Of course, we came out later and learned that, they had kind of had been planning on, even though they were, telling us this stuff, they'd been planning on retiring for at least a year. And we had sources within their factory and all that kind of, and again, we're not journalists. So it's not something I never felt like this was, for me to go report or anything, but we had sources inside the factory saying, oh, there's plenty of leaf. Everything's fine. They just kind of wanted to retire for, quite a while. And they, regulations are now starting to pop up and they're like, well, we're kind of done fooling with it. And this type of thing. And so as a retailer, okay, now think about it. Here I am, a young tobacconist who, at the time I'm what, early 30s, and, don't quite, haven't even met my wife yet at this point, I guess. And so, and thinking, well, okay, they're saying this company that we all have revered and looked to for, not just the best products on earth, but a lot of expertise and wisdom. You know, what they're saying, they're retiring because they're tired, and the industry is becoming more difficult. And I understand that. And I'd kind of want to get out too, frankly. If I was used to it being so easy for decades, and now it's getting harder, and I don't want to fool with that and all this kind of stuff. But, here I am, a young tobacconist who had just bought a historic shop with, other people's money and taken a big risk and all this. And I have this deep love and care for the pipe community and what it's done for me, and how my life is different because of it, how the Lord has used it to impart just a lot of beauty in my life, and a lot of healing in some ways. It's just really something. And then this very revered source within the industry is all of a sudden saying, well, what they're actually telling people is that we're getting out of this because everything sucks now. We're getting out of the business because all the product is crap now.
Yeah, so I wanted to throw this one to Russ. So,
man,
Russ,
that hurt.
Yeah, talk about that messaging going out, especially from a consumer standpoint. How did you do you recall the specific wordage that was used and kind of like how you received that?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was like, I want to say February 27th is when the news hit, but the official closing letter came out the next day, and we all read it. And basically it gave four talking points. It said essentially their time-honored, labor-intensive processes at the farm are disappearing. So now, they used to go through and do three cuts where you would cut the bottom, cut the middle, cut the top, and you would get grades. And Mike kept on saying, that everything's gradeless now. It's just all the same, and we all agree that they're grades of tobacco. And I think with everything that happened with the USDA and them doing the farmer buyout, mess is a huge disaster for pipe tobacco. So those things are true.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. And I think, they used to age all their tobacco in North Carolina, do the summer sweats. And so what makes McClellan so interesting, and people that smoke Virginia know that Virginia can be extremely harsh, but if you let it sit like they did, have super high sugar content leaf, and you let it sit for a long period of time, summer after summer, and it mellows down. Mm-hmm. And how they were able to get nearly 24% sugar content leaf, you just can't get it these days. I mean, even if you go and buy Carolina Red Flake, which I think is some of the best Red Virginia out there, from C&D, it's only 10% according to the label. But it's also, it's kind of a mystery too, because bright leaf is what has all the sugar, not red. So how do you get 24% red and orange? I mean, it's amazing. And it really, so they had access to some unicorns there, I think. But then, they come out with a third statement basically saying, the supportive infrastructure from the government, what they used to provide, is just no longer there. And those things are true. But the thing that hit me as a consumer the hardest was when they said that we might have lipped along, with some inferior leaf for a time, but we would have been ashamed of the product. And so when I thought that, I was like, it really hurts. And I'm gonna leave that there.
I feel just propelled to, to echo this and emphasize it. I mean, so these are a group of people that are highly respected that we look to for leadership within our industry and all that kind of stuff. That have benefited the industry greatly. And are guardians and caretakers of some of the most venerated tobacco creations in pipedom, literally. And what they're saying now is, well, we've got good authority that they've got plenty of stock in the back, and there's plenty of leaf and all that kind of stuff. But what they're saying is, well, there's just, everything's just junk now, and so within a 2 week period, okay, this letter comes out, and every, and I want you to hear this clearly, every other tobacco blender in the world felt thrown under the bus.
There it is.
Everyone.
Yep.
I want that to land because they're, number one, all these government regulations that came out, those didn't come out in 2016. Those didn't come out in 2018. They were, you know, this is all, a lot of the stuff that, you know, that they were complaining about, this is stuff that, you know, had been, they'd been dealing with since the 90s, you know, or the 2000s or early 2010s. This wasn't like, oh, well, okay, it, you know, it got really, really bad in 2017. And so we're just shutting the door. You know, a lot of this stuff was stuff that had, you know, they dealt with for a while. So was it good? Is it stuff that, you know, we'd like to deal with? No, but you know, this is old hat, you know, it's something, okay, well, it's not the good old days, but you know, we're used to it and folks are getting along and, you know, pipe blenders are making some good stuff and we're, you know, cranking it out and all this. And, you know, and so, you know, that I don't really take that as a, you know, we're not selling this company. We're shutting it down. You know, but not because, you know, again, we're tired of dealing with the regulations and all this kind of stuff. That's the answer. That's the answer. That's where it was. But what got thrown under the bus was the quality of what was out there. And every other blender in literally the world, all of a sudden was like, huh, you know, so it was painful. And a lot of folks, again, me included, you know, when you smoke McClellan tobaccos, okay, what you're smoking, what you're tasting, it is the quality of a leaf, but it's also a very, this, hear me now, hear me, pipe smoker. It's the quality of a leaf, but it's also a very specific process that they put that leaf through to achieve that flavor. Okay. Every tobacco manufacturer out there is using some type of proprietary process in order to achieve the flavor that you're tasting. And if you think you're tasting a leaf that was harvested, dried out, shredded, and then sent to you in a can to put in your pipe, boy, I've got news for you. And it's not that McClellan, that they use the best stuff. But it's not, and there were some instances where they had access to some of the best stuff, particularly Christmas Cheer. I mean, Mike was able to go, you know, forge these relationships with these small batch farmers, and they'd, you know, say, well, you know, we think this acre over here is really good, that acre over there not so much, but maybe half of it. And Mike would be like, well, okay, give me this one and give me half of that one, you know, and we'll do something with that. And he'd sit on that tobacco for years, and it was magic, you know, just really, really precious, and you know, labor intensive, the amount of care that went into developing that, you know, but overall, a lot of the component leaves that were coming in and out, you know, this is stuff that everyone has access to, you know, a lot of the different tobacco makers have access to. And so, it's their process that was proprietary that, you know, that was not, not being duplicated by other tobacco blenders. And that, so much of what you're tasting when you think about those old McClellan blends and how good they were, and they were so good, doggone it. It's like I said earlier, why can't I make something as good as Aurora? You know, you know, so much of what you're tasting is that McClellan process, that tang that they had, and that other blenders choose not to do, but could if they you know, were able to piece together the secret formula that they had produced.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I want that to be clear. In that, man, the hurt that happened, I think, when folks heard the statement, there's just not good leaf out there anymore. That's wrong. That is wrong.
I've heard people just say it flatly, man. It's a lie.
It's
just, a lie.
It's just,
it was a lie then. And it's a lie now.
Yeah, I mean, look, is this, you know, the 1950s where they're just fields of, you know, tobacco, and man, you got this, you know, these skilled people going up and down, you know, picking the leaves once a day, you know, checking the, you know, the ripeness of each plant and all this kind of stuff. No, it's not that. But, you know, is it different now? You know, things have changed, but I'm telling you, it's not that there is good leaf out yes. there. And we see it used every single day by some of the leading tobacco companies in the world that may have a different taste than McClelland, but very much have a similar quality product of McClelland. And to me, that's clear. And so I need to communicate that.
You know, there is a difference between being
hard.
No. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you said it exactly the way.
I need a cigarette now. Can someone give me a cigarette?
Oh, no, we don't condone cigarettes on this show. Repack your pipe. Listen. Like, there is a difference, because don't misunderstand. There's a difference between being kind of a curmudgeon sitting on your porch with some buddies and saying it ain't as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
And there's another difference when you are one of the most influential voices in an industry that you are actively like propping up to some extent, because you are producing such a critical component, or what has been such a critical component.
Yeah. Certainly for your brick and mortar
stores out there. And here's the thing, not even in a silent way. It's one, like, if you're going to act like the Godfather, if you're going to act like, hey, you know, this is my town. Like, and then you're going to like light it on fire as you go out the door. And then, by the way, you don't actually go out the door and you still hang out in the ashes.
Mm.
I'm sorry, man. Look, I don't know Mike. I may never meet Mike.
I probably won't now.
But I've met loyalists to him. Actually, I'll share this with you, man. I was at an event, and I guess I won't mention where, and there was somebody who actually worked in tobacco publication back in the day, but very much predated us and is very much in his camp. And this man said some stuff about McClelland and the way McClelland exited that I was like, that's not true. And I've talked to various other tobacconists who are still out here, and we got into a back and forth on it. And it's so interesting, John Day, because at this event, I told Russ about this before, but all of the people that were there smoking their pipes, everybody was chatting, kind of like spread out. Everybody stopped and started gathering around us. And it was like a fight in the schoolyard. And don't get me wrong, I was very reverent and respectful. Like, I was not trying to be disrespectful, especially this was an elder statesman who had a ton of knowledge and an industry experience and that sort of thing. So I was not trying to be disrespectful, but I also wasn't going to like just go along to get along when he was saying something that I believed strongly was not true.
Incorrect. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, I had to catch myself, John David. I had to catch myself in that, because I looked around and I realized that we had become a spectacle for everybody there. And it gave me pause, because I recognized the fact that I wasn't just a man standing up for something I thought was true. I had a voice in this industry and in this community. Yeah. And honestly, I kind of put the conversation on pause, because I did not want to disrespect this man in front of, like, first of all, I didn't want to show him any disrespect one way or the other, but I also wasn't trying to put on a spectacle for other people either.
Yeah, sure. And yeah. So, I mean, and again, we've talked about that interaction that you had with this gentleman. And
that's right. We have mentioned it before, but the fact of the matter is, though, like, I understood in that moment, like, that's right. I'm not just some guy having a conversation. My voice, regardless of whether or not how much I want it to at this moment, it carries weight in this space. You have to have that self-awareness. If I'm going to come on here and I'm going to be part of Country Squire Radio, and, you know, we're going to be part of this kind of larger community, listen, and I'm not going around asking anybody to kiss my ring or anything like that. I'm always shocked whenever I meet our listeners.
Gosh, you know what I mean? It's the last thing I want. I don't want anyone kissing my hand.
Yeah, there is no gatekeeping here at Country Squire Radio. But my point is, but at the same time, I recognize the fact that we carry weight in what we said. Mike and McClelland as a company carried enormous weight and should not have been shocked by it. It certainly, and Mike specifically, from what I understand, but McClelland did not carry itself in such a way that it did not recognize the importance, the value, and the influence that it had. Yeah. So that's what's so frustrating.
Okay. That last statement there kind of, I was trying to figure out where on earth you were going. And that last statement there, I think brings it home, you do have to, if you're carrying that much weight, recognize that, okay, well, people people's livelihoods in some sense, or are in a very real sense, frankly, are depending on you. And so, you know, just be aware of the gravity of it. And, you know, I think that, that was what was so shocking, is that it wasn't, you know, what we were hearing wasn't, you know, it was almost like it was designed to try to, you know, make themselves kind of feel better about getting out, rather than just saying, you know, we're just kind of tired and just want to go home, you know, and that's great. I think after going through that experience with, you know, with the folks at McClelland, and then us, as Bo and I mentioned earlier, you know, we never have seen ourselves as reporters and all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden I realized, after, you know, people started really, you know, getting on us, they're like, man, you're lying to us and all this kind of stuff. You knew the truth, but you told us one thing and then a different thing happened. And when really in reality, I was just sitting there parroting what I was hearing every week from Mary McNeil, that she was literally telling me over the phone about the, you know, the future of their company and the, you know, future availability of their products. It's at that moment that I realized my own responsibility as someone within the pipe community, and that I wasn't just going to be going to be a mouthpiece anymore for these companies just because I liked what they did.
Right.
Yeah. I learned a real lesson there, because I wanted to communicate, hey, these are people I love. These are products I love. Like, man, hey, what can I tell the community to, you know, help you out and help your business, help my business and support the community and make sure everyone's, you know, is, you know, fears are assuaged and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, I'm getting this information from them, and I'm diligently coming back over here to Country Squire Radio and sharing it week in and week out with our, you know, thousands of listeners, literally all over the world every week. And then, you know, and then that happens to not be the case. And so what I'm being told is not, it doesn't square up with the facts about what actually happened. And so, it's at that moment, I think, that I learned my own lesson about not being anyone's, you know, not toting the water for anybody. Right. Because we kind of did. We kind of did. We got, you know, it was like, well, we were the ones that, you know, were the bad guys in all this. And right. And man, it was really painful.
It was difficult.
It's just really, really painful. Yeah. As someone who's incredibly codependent, who wants everybody to like me, that was really, really painful.
I know. This very episode has given you a heart attack. I already know, because of course, man, you've been very honest. You've been very raw. I really appreciate that. I realize maybe I'm come across pretty harsh, but a lot of this has been pent up, and hearing multiple stories from various people across the industry in different roles, from smaller town shops to bigger name blenders,
to some of the biggest tobacco pipe manufacturers and most respected manufacturers in the world.
And after kind of sucking up all that feedback and kind of hearing kind of these mixed stories. And so if I come across harsh, that's part of where that's coming from. But I tell you, Russ, man, I know I'm going after your Splash Mountain buddy. So, I mean, like, you know, jump in here, man.
Yeah. So, Well,
was it Splash Mountain, or was it which ride was it on?
No, we mainly spent time on Main Street talking, just sitting there. But you know, I got to stand up for Mike a little bit here, because he's brutally honest, and I agree that they could have just come out and said, "Hey, we want to retire." They were in there; they were at retirement age, and that would have been perfectly acceptable and understandable. And I agree with that part. But how do you move forward from here? I think is one of the real things. And I don't think Mike is lying. I don't know. I think he believes all the good leaf is gone, even though we know that that's not true. And I want to believe that, because I don't. After spending time with him,
you want to believe that he believes that is what you mean.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And after spending time with him, I see him as a brutally honest individual. And I think what he thinks is what he believes. And so nothing against his character. I, I really like him as a person. But let's back up. And so to me, the evidence is really clear that until somebody comes out with a product that matches what McClellan's was able to do, you have to admit that the leaf in the style that it was presented to us is gone. So that needs to change. We need to figure out what they were doing. Somebody needs to do this.
And it can. It can.
When we will.
Yeah.
I mean, if man,
because
I
the
have,
leaf that is no, available no, now Russ, is not different from the leaf that was available 10 years ago.
Right. I mean, and Russ, you've actually worked to some extent to try to reverse engineer the process. Is that fair? A fair statement?
Well, a little bit. So everybody believes that they put vinegar in the stuff. And I actually got to sit down and say, hey, look, what in the heck are you putting in the cans? And we had a long talk about it. And I was like, you know, what's your favorite blend? And he talked about how he loved Christmas Cheer and how he loved 2010. And he wished that they had put it in giant, you know, pound containers. Yeah. They should attend that. Yeah. But he basically told me that what he's doing is taking super high sugar leaf, putting it in a tin and not filling it all the way up and letting it ferment. Mm-hmm. So everybody believes that he put vinegar on it. So I asked him that point blank and he's like, hey, you should put vinegar on pipe tobacco, you know, and kind of see what it does. So I have tried that. I've tried pressing it. I've tried it through osmosis. I've tried misting it. And what you end up with is vinegar on pipe tobacco and it's foul. So, you know, and so that's not what they were doing, but there was a process. I do think they had clearly two things in there. Propylene glycol was one of them. Mm-hmm. I there's no doubt that the stuff is moist. Mm-hmm. 30 years later when I open it, and an antifungal, because they've never had any mold in any tin, and I've opened thousands of them.
That has never been an issue with McClellan. Never.
Never. Never. So, but the thing, what's heartbreaking to me is that when they pass, all of this knowledge is gone. And if you want to see what the tragedy really is, to me, that's what it is. Because a whole pipe community loses when this goes away.
That's right.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be upset about something as a consumer on my side, and I understand where you're coming from in industry, but that's what I'm upset about.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
So,
it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't.
So that's the thing, right? Like, and this is where I feel like there is a path towards, and maybe redemption is too strong a word.
Where are we on the Bourne identity thing that you,
the Bourne ultimatum. This is the Bourne ultimatum. All right. This is the McClellan ultimatum.
We've gone through, I feel like these are the stages of depression or something. What is it? You go through to acceptance or something. I don't know.
Oh, wait, no, there was the Bourne supremacy. I forgot about that. You know what? My entire Bourne analogy is thrown out the window.
Just totally blown. Yeah.
And that was the one where he was the sniper on the roof. Anyway, here's the thing. There is still time. Like the what Russ is saying is exactly true, because the products are fantastic. They are extremely quality. I am a consumer. I treasure my tins of Throgmorton and only bust them out for special occasions at this point. And they are a really great quality product. And the reality is, and this is why I think this episode is so necessary, because the sin needs to be acknowledged. Like the faults need to be acknowledged, because there's time for correction. There's time to actually for redemption from that standpoint. This doesn't have to be the way that you leave the industry. I would argue that for some people, you know, obviously McClellan, there's a huge fan base for them. There's a lot of, especially kind of older folks in the industry that still kind of, stand by kind of the company lines and everything else that they were putting out at the time. But the reality is, there's a lot of people in the industry, especially those that will be really dominating the industry and kind of currently are dominating the industry, mm-hmm. that don't have that positive view about how things were left. But there is time. That process can be passed down. Like, choose a successor. And it doesn't have to be anybody on this show. It doesn't have to be Russ, although he's obviously in the lab. It doesn't have to be John David. I'm sure he would like trade you one of his kids for the process. But the point is, choose a successor who you like, who you trust, and and create a path forward and do some redemptive work here.
Yeah. Take an apprentice or
take an apprentice. Yes.
Yeah. So someone that can
sell the company, sell, obviously the company's gone, but sell the proprietary information. But I'm not saying like, give it away. Like, look, I'm a businessman, make money, get your money, bro. Like I'm not, you know, but at the same time there it's this interesting facet of, listen, it's, you know, it's yours. Nobody's saying these ain't your toys, but at the same time, you know, kicking sand in everybody's face while you're taking your toys to go home and then like incinerate them. Like nobody's going to look at that kid. Like sure, the kid can do it, but nobody's going to look at that kid positively. And so there's a chance, there's still time to correct the path and like, you know, come back strong. Like I would love a, you know, Michael Jordan-esque return, right? Like we've got the greatest, we got the GOAT in terms of this process and the products that can be created. I would love to see a return that sets up a legacy for, from a consumer side, especially for the pipe smokers who enjoy those products, for the, for the folks that discover them, especially early on, that took them from that, oh, cool, Gandalf smokes a pipe, I want to, like Sherlock, oh, cool, to like, wow, this is what this can be? Because that's the thing, the caliber, the quality, the talent is all there. And so,
yeah,
Mike, let me just say this. I need to say this.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Mike, if you're listening, and I don't know if you are, and you may have turned it off by now, and you may have just written me off as, you know, whoever. don't misunderstand, like, you know, hey, you love Brutal Honesty? Here's the thing. I love your products. I would love to see them continue. And I would love to see your name celebrated. Mm. And honestly, right now, what people are too afraid to tell you is that your name is not celebrated, not by anybody that's going to outlast you. So please, please correct your legacy. Like there is a path here. So look, I'm pulling for you. If I've ticked you off, then I'm sorry, but I haven't said anything that I didn't personally believe. If we're going to use the, you know, that concept, it's, you know,
I'm going to need a drink.
Also, and let me just go ahead and say this. I speak for myself, Russ speaks for himself, and John David speaks for himself.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's true. And I do appreciate Bo, you know, feeling the, you know, the ability to take off the gloves a little bit. I mean, this is something that he has felt passionate about for years now because of, you know, the events of early 2018. And of course, I have strong emotions about it too. You know, this is all hard and difficult and just sad. I think, like you said, Russ, because it's something that future generations won't get to experience. You know, you crack open that tin of Aurora, that's not even their most, you know, popular blend. It's sitting on the back of the shelf there. I mean, I even think of other ones like Grey Havens and, gosh, there was, you know, some of their, aromatic ones. What was the one that was named after the pin or whatever? I can't remember. All those
Master Penman.
They're all great. You know, every
fantastic.
Every freaking one of them. You know, and it's frustrating because, you know, the pipe smoker of today and of tomorrow, you know, won't get to won't get to enjoy that and appreciate it. And it didn't have to be that way. It just didn't have to be that way. And so it's difficult for me as someone that looks up to, you know, the founder and then owners of this company. It's difficult for me as someone who, you know, would love to be these people when you grow up and all this kind of stuff. You know, and just worship their products and, you know, think they've hung the moon and all this kind of stuff. And then to have that, you know, happen how it did and not just, you know, affect your business, but affect your reputation, you know, because you went to bat for them kind of thing. You know, that was hard. So, man, Mike, you know, and Mary, we appreciate, you know, McClelland and, man, our Gladder sellers are full of McClelland products and wish I sure had more and man, wish I could get more in the future.
Russ, any final thoughts before we toss it?
Man, it's hard to put an end on that, but yeah, I mean for us as a pipe community, you know, trying to figure out how we can move forward from this. I think I've said that before, but that's really where you know, I'd like my focus to be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, and people have come to me and asked, what do I do? You know, I've never experienced McClellan. What do I do? Should I go spend a ton of money and buy it? And my answer to them is no, don't start.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that will keep on, you know, every day there's less and less McClellan's tobacco, and eventually it'll just go away. And, you know, and I think this happens to everybody. You know, we're at this stage, you know, in time, there are guys that have lost their favorite blends. That's something that happens. But to me, this is more than that. This is actually a very unique, very special process that's being lost. It's not just a single blend. Yeah. It's a whole spectrum of things. And it is really heartbreaking. And it shouldn't be this way. And somehow we need to fix it. Right now, I don't see any path forward. I tell people basically go find something else.
Yeah,
that is not what I want to tell them. But I myself, even though I have a large stockpile of this stuff, I have gone and found other things. Yeah. They are out there.
They are, man. They are. And they're you know, some of the, I mean, just look at the delicious experiments and, you know, aggressive stuff that, you know, folks like Mac Baron are putting out on the market. I mean, just some of the most interesting, you know, tobacco combinations in the world, you know, that is readily available and only growing, you know, and they're getting creative on how they're sourcing their products and, you know, and who they're working with and all that kind of stuff. Man, I mean, just think about the great stuff coming from people like Mac Baron, coming from Sutliff, coming from Cornell and Deal. You know, I mean, these are they may be you know, different from McClellan. Certainly they are, but you've got extremely high quality products of that caliber all over the market that that are different, but are certainly as good in their own realm. And so, explore those, enjoy them. And the pipe industry, you know, people that are retiring may want you to think that, oh, it's all gone and it's terrible and the best days are behind it. And well, we're not going to make this stuff anymore because we'd be ashamed and all this kind of stuff. But man, there is so much tobacco out there that you should not be ashamed to enjoy and smoke. And it would go toe to toe with tobacco from any decade of the last century. And I'll leave it at that.
Man, well, Russ, we really appreciate you coming on. I know you've got this is obviously a passionate topic for a lot of folks, but I know you in particular. I would wager of the McClellan fans out there, they'd be hard pressed to find somebody who had the knowledge, had the experience with the folks behind the scenes, and the not just the stockpile, but the internal laboratory to do all the reverse engineering that you've attempted. I'd love to think that somewhere in your cellar, you also have a bunch of test tubes with various tobacco products that would somehow give people superpowers if they were struck by lightning or something like that.
Oh, I wish that were true, but I do have a lot of blended things that some have been good and some have been failures. But I think anybody that blends or tries their hand at that knows it. I do want us to look to science. So even though, you know, the funniest thing is you hear like with all the good leaf is gone and they want you to believe that, you know, the hailstorm has to happen and the ground has to be the right temperature and the leaf and the great leaf appears. Right.
Yeah. That's
and, right. The great pumpkin.
So, right. And I know that those things are important. There's no doubt that there's some crops that are better than others because, you know, Mary herself said that they could go to these auctions, which no longer exist. I wish they did, but they go to these auctions and they could have a raw bale of red sitting there totally unprocessed and they could smoke it in a clay and immediately tell if it's good or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the funny thing is they would say like on it, how much sugar it had, and they may have the right amount of sugar, but if it had like trace minerals or whatever, they couldn't use it. It needed to taste a certain way. Well, what we need to do, they need to show somebody else what that tastes like. That needs to, if the ingredients really do matter, it's going to still happen. at some point it's going to, these things are going to be created, or if we need to, as a pipe community, figure out how to make our own red, we need to do this. And,
and by the way, the tobacco auctions, that didn't end in 2015 or 20, certainly 28, that was years ago that ended. It's not a new thing. Right. So I just want to be clear about that.
Yeah. I mean, it had been, I forget exactly when that started, but you know, well, essentially the pipe community had to pay for the USDA to buy out those farmers.
Yeah, sure.
And that happened over probably a 10-year period. Yeah. All of this stuff is out there. We have to figure it out. And the other thing, the community, it'll take a community as a whole. Mm. And what I recommend that everybody go out and read, Dr. John Leffingwell's paper. Basically, he wrote a paper called Chemical Constituents of Tobacco Leaf and Differences Among Tobacco Types. Now, who is John Leffingwell? He's a taste specialist. Like he worked for R.J. Reynolds back right out of college when he got his PhD. Unfortunately, he passed away in December of 2020. So just recently. He wrote this amazing paper, and it talks about all the leaf that we love and why it tastes the way it does.
Wow. Yeah.
And the beautiful thing at the end of that, he has 50 some odd references. Some of those references are like production factors affecting chemical properties of flue cured leaf with the aging and processing. We need to read that paper. It's from 1975. There's all these papers, and I've been collecting.
What a wealth, man. What a wealth. Yeah.
So when you have tobacco and it makes millions of dollars, people do science, and this information is out there. It's not a great mystery, and we need to take that. Pipe smokers are incredibly intelligent, and they can figure this out. And it would be nice if the McNeils would help us. And I love the McNeils. I know we've said some things on here that are contrary to that, but we all love them. And we just wish that they would help us.
Yeah.
And
agreed.
But the answer is going to be in science. I recommend that we as a community start to educate ourselves on this and, you know, become more open about it, and let's not lose let's recreate this somehow. And I don't know where it starts, if it starts small or if it starts at a big company. I always thought that Sykes would come in and make some deal with Mike, because when I was at Disney World, Mike offered to sell me.
Sykes, speaking of Sykes Wolford, who owns Law DC and smokingpipes.com and, you know, now Peterson and these other groups. Yeah.
Right. So, and you know, when I was at Disney World, Mike basically said, he said, if you want to, for $10 million, you can buy McClellan's. And I was taken aback. I was like, what? He's like, yeah. And I think to make that clear, I think Mary actually owns the company, so he may not have been able to sell it. But, you know, my where I wanted to go with that is I said, oh, you know, I'll find some investors. We'll buy this thing and I'll let John David run it, because I know that he could figure out how to do it. And there's something there. All this stuff can't get lost. Can you imagine if like the all those tobacco blends get lost, they get burned, thrown away. Can you imagine?
Yeah. And someone's estate sale or something, you know?
Yeah. And so I feel like we as a community, I don't know if this is possible, but all things are possible. And, I think we need to figure out how to keep this alive. Yeah.
And it can, can. Yeah.
Well, man, this
great
is
a discussion. Great discussion. Yeah, it's really good. Really, it was powerful and emotional for me. And golly, if you're new to the pipe world and you don't know what a McClelland is, if it hits you in the face, this is like, what?
Yeah, but, probably put a disclaimer on this one or something.
Man, please know that it's one of the best tobacco companies, certainly this side of the Atlantic, that's ever existed, and has a dear place in our heart. And because of you know, how events took place for the past several years evokes a lot of emotions to us, but we miss it and hope we smoke some of it again.
There you go. Well, obviously, this was a very different episode of Country Squire Radio. Hope you've enjoyed the discussion. I know it's been, you know, a little tense at times, a little more emotional. Not the normal Country Squire Radio than what you're used to, but this is a topic that has a lot of passion behind it. And we know that you probably have some various thoughts. As John David mentioned, if you're a new pipe smoker, you're probably scratching your head as to what we're even talking about. But for those of you that do want to share your thoughts on this, I mean, we welcome that feedback. Email us at show@countrysquireradio.com. We'd love to get your thoughts on this topic. And don't worry, next week we're going to be back to normal format, back to normal fun times here at Country Squire Radio. Much, much more light. It should be a blast. So special thanks to Russ Hicks for joining us this week. And until next time, let's go have a day.
See you, bud.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.